Freddy Cruz coming up today on Undivided as the primary election results come into focus. We now know who's moving ahead in many key races to November. And thankfully, one of the most dangerous political candidates who is on the ballot will not be making it through. Also, former President Donald Trump is losing some of his momentum in key battleground states, including Wisconsin. Former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker joins us to offer his thoughts on what Trump can do to get back on track.
In 16, part of why he won in Wisconsin elsewhere was because he was perceived as being a fighter for the voters.
And Seattle City Council chambers erupt as members discuss the possibility of actually holding criminals accountable for crime. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. And welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. As we have this week, since it is primary election week and ballot results are still coming in, we do want to go through the latest results in some of the top races, but I will start with an official celebration. I began the celebration yesterday, and now I'm going to do my celebratory dance. I have no dance.
Apparently, is the robot.
I have no dancing skills. That's what you get. I mean, if I was out of my seat, you know, I could like shake it and stuff, but you don't want to see that. Trust me, you don't want to see that.
Oh, they do. But
Maka Dingra is done in the AG's race. She issued a formal concession. I'll read that for you in a moment. But where things are at right now, Pete Serrano, the Republican candidate, has got 42%. Nick Brown, I would still call him a progressive, but certainly he's more moderate than Maka Dingra. He's at 35%. And Maka Dingra, the state senator, who is for some inexplicable reason wanted to be the attorney general, the state's chief law enforcer, even though she actively pushed laws to help criminals. She's at 22%. And so it looked pretty obvious yesterday. There's still about 500,000 ballots to be counted. But when the latest results came out in the evening yesterday, it became pretty clear that she wouldn't be able to close that gap. And she agreed. And she took to her social media. She put out a statement saying, "Thank you all for your incredible support throughout this campaign. While the results were not what we hoped for, I am deeply grateful for the trust and support I received from so many along the way. Trust that she broke when she lied about her background, but I digress." She said, "This journey has been an honor, and I remain committed to fighting for justice for all in my role in the Senate. Congratulations to Nick Brown on the victory. I wish you all the best as you head into November, and thank you once again to everyone for your support along the way." She didn't congratulate Pete Serrano. That's weird.
Strange.
She congratulated Nick Brown on his victory. He got second. She left out the person who got first. Odd. I will tell you, Maka Dingra, even though you're not going to be the attorney general and are still going to be a thorn in our side in the Washington State Senate, we're going to stay on you. Because honestly, I mean, there's more in your background that I do not believe that you were fully transparent and honest about. And we continue to look into that since you do continue to be a public servant. And I would just advise you, if you have hopes of reaching higher office at a later point, let this be a lesson to you that people do value and care about public safety. And when you blocked things like the police pursuit fix from getting hearings in your committee, people took notice. We took notice, and we're going to make sure that as many people as possible are following the things you do to erode public safety in the state of Washington. So I would change course if I were you and you ever wanted to get elected to anything else in your career. All right. A couple of other races I want to go through. The governor's race, obviously, just to keep you updated on where that's at. Semi Bird's at double digits now. So, you know, it's not bad for him.
Technically, I think he's at 9.9.
We round up here or we round down.
And we stayed consistent with that even for Semi.
We learned how to round decimal points during our public education. I can't promise that kids going through our public school system right now will be learning how to round decimal points. Bob Ferguson with 45%, Dave Reichert with 28%, Semi Bird 10%, State Senator Mark Mullett at 6%. So Dave Reichert's got some work to do. He's got to get those Bird supporters, got to get those Mullett supporters. And I will say, you know, I went on a little rant yesterday on the show about how it was disappointing. I was seeing some people on social media say that they wouldn't support Dave Reichert because he's a rhino. But by and large, I mean, if you look at my social media clip I put out yesterday on that subject, most people are saying, well, of course I'm going to support Dave Reichert. So I really do think it's a minority of people who really would sit it out and let Bob Ferguson sail into the governor's mansion. So I have some relief after breathing yesterday, getting on social media and seeing that, you know, people might be talking a big talk, but when it comes down to it, they understand that beating Bob Ferguson is the single most important mission for anyone who values law enforcement, public safety, helping working class families, actually helping the environment and the homeless and the drug addicted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I did suffer through the Semi Bird podcast last night to see what happened.
Did he talk about it?
He did not talk about us that I caught. I rushed through it, but he did mention that he was going to issue an endorsement at some point. So there's two candidates and I'm quite curious what his endorsement will
be. Maybe he's changed his mind. I mean, I don't know. He did tell Scott Greenstone with KUOW that Dave Reichert, he wouldn't endorse Dave Reichert because Dave Reichert doesn't align with his beliefs and values whatsoever, which he said that before the ballots came in. So maybe when he saw that he really did not do maybe as good as he thought he was going to do, he realized like, okay, Dave Reichert is the candidate that we the people want, you know? And so maybe he's going to change his mind. And I hope that's the case. I mean, he's not going to endorse Bob Ferguson.
I hope not. So, I'm hoping it's not some writing campaign.
Don't do any writing campaigns, for the love of God. And I also saw some people saying they're going to write in Semi Bird. You cannot. Well, you can, but it won't count. So you can't launch or run a writing campaign for an office that you appeared on the primary ballot for and did not advance, which I think is a good law and a good rule. I mean, we'll see what happens from here, but I have faith in people. I think I feel better today about that than I did yesterday. I was seeing some social media posts and then I look at them. I'm like, those are nameless, faceless people. There's like 10 of them. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. But that doesn't mean that Dave Reichert doesn't have to earn their votes. He does.
I feel like they get get offended by people calling them toxic supporters. But look at your actions. Look at what you're doing. You are being toxic to the party and to your cause, because it's not to divide people. You have to bring people together or you're not going to get anywhere.
Well, you have to also, incremental change is a thing. You know, it's really hard to go from 40 years of one party rule to all of a sudden like the polar opposite. I mean, things, I don't know if that's something that will ever happen here, but there's a reason why moderate Republicans run, because they're the ones who have more viable campaigns. Now, they haven't won either. To be clear, like, establishment candidates on the Republican side have not won races for governor. They've been close. You know, Rob McKenna was really close. But then you look at like a Lauren Culp, and there's a reason he lost by 500,000 votes. And so, it's just about being reasonable and putting take emotions out of it. How many times do you actually get to vote for someone who you're like genuinely excited and thrilled about and like you would stand next to them on the field of battle? Not very often. I think a lot of the voting we do is just holding our nose and then it's just filling in the circle and then having a drink and forgetting all about it. So just, it's fine. All right. Sixth congressional district I want to touch on briefly, just because it's kind of the opposite situation of the AG's race, where the further to the left of the two Democrats wound up getting through to the November election. This has got to be a big bummer for Hillary Franz. And you asked me 3 years ago, I would have said I would absolutely support Hillary Franz in a race for governor. I really felt that way. I felt like she valued, as a Democrat, rural communities in a way that we just had not seen Democrats. But then she kind of went down this slope of, and honestly, may this be a lesson for her. Remember on the show like 6 months ago when she was a year ago, running for governor, and then in Congress, all of a sudden she was putting out, MAGA this, Trump that. She'd never done that before. She had never acted like that before. It was just bizarre to me. It was like, you're acting like a totally different person. Why are you doing that? And in this case, she couldn't out-progressive the real progressive, Emily Randall. So that, I think that's just a lesson, is like Hillary Franz was more popular and got more attention and publicity than I think any commissioner of public lands in human history. And that's what her current position is. She had, I think, would have had bipartisan support in her run for governor. Now, I don't know if she would have beat Bob Ferguson, but I think, she had support going into that. And then it was like, oh my gosh, now I've got to turn it on and call Republicans weird and MAGA and right wing. And it's like, well, now you got 25% of the vote. And now what are you going to do next? So Emily Randall's moving forward. I said yesterday she's got 34% of the vote. Drew McEwen at 30% of the vote. I think Drew's got a good shot because he'll get some of those Franz votes. I really believe that in a working class district like the 6th congressional district, Emily Randall's, that's a hard sell. I have a really hard time seeing them send someone that far left to like join the squad in Congress. I mean, they lost Cori Bush. The squad's looking for a replacement. It could be Emily Randall. All right. Hillary Frantz did put out a concession. She said, thank you to everyone who supported our campaign over these last 9 months. It has been an amazing journey, seeing old friends and making new friends, talking with voters about the issues that matter to them, hearing their personal stories. Together, we built a powerful movement and united folks across the district, creating economic opportunity, addressing our housing needs, protecting our freedoms, and taking on the climate crisis. I will also say, Hillary, we've gotten along great in the past. Did we invite Hillary on this show?
Many times.
Sure did. Did we invite her on this show, Nicole, to talk about her gubernatorial campaign?
Many times.
Sure did. Did we invite her on the show to talk about her congressional campaign?
Yes, ma'am.
Sure did. Did she respond?
No, ma'am.
No, ma'am. And she had come on my show at Fox many, many times. And I really believe that if you're in a tight race and you need the middle, this is the show that you need to come on. 100%. There's a reason Mark Mullett always came on this show, is because he understood that he could appeal to moderate Republicans by coming on this show. I mean, unfortunately for him, there was a Republican in the race that moderate Republicans preferred than a moderate Democrat. But Hillary Frantz, I don't know. I feel like we could have gotten you maybe 9% more. I'm just saying, not tooting my own horn, toot toot, but this is where the middle lives. So if you want the middle, you got to come on the Undivided Podcast. All right, the most fascinating race right now is like perceived as one of the most boring jobs, but it is not a boring job. It just does not get the credit that it deserves. The Commissioner of Public Lands race, still right now, the top two are Republicans. Now that could change. There are, I think, so about 500,000 ballots left to be counted. 120,000 of those, give or take, are in King County. So Dave Updegrove has some good name recognition in King County. So he's down. It's like the difference of 1% between him and Sue Keel Peterson. So Jamie Herrera Butler, the former congresswoman, appears that she's going to advance. The question is, will she have a Republican opponent? And will Republicans by default get back into statewide office? Or will it be Dave Updegrove? So we are watching that one closely. We'll have more ballots counted at 4 p.m. today. All right, so we talked a lot about the primary election, about local and statewide races. Obviously, all of this is happening under the umbrella in the context of the national presidential race, which does impact local elections here. How Donald Trump is doing on the campaign trail, the message he's pushing on the campaign trail, it impacts Republican candidates here and vice versa for Kamala Harris and her new running mate. What they're talking about, the issues that they're pushing out there impact Democratic candidates down ticket. So it is important occasionally that we talk about the presidential campaign. You might have seen, like, ever since, so there was the horrible debate performance from Joe Biden, which gave Donald Trump some momentum. And then, of course, there was the attempted assassination, which gave Donald Trump a lot of momentum. But ever since then, and since Kamala Harris got in the race and Joe Biden took a step back, it really feels like, you can feel, it's like palpable that the momentum for Donald Trump just has not been there. And the poll numbers in key battleground states show that as well. When Joe Biden was still in the race, Donald Trump was absolutely dominating battleground states, and he has seen those leads shrink, including in arguably one of the most important battleground states. That's the state of Wisconsin. So we happen to have the perfect person in town today to comment on what Donald Trump can do to win over voters in Wisconsin. That is former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. So not only is he the former governor of Wisconsin, but he is also someone who has the ear of former President Donald Trump.
You mentioned authenticity earlier, and I think that's something I'm struggling with this election. Mm. I mean, Kamala Harris's authenticity is basically zero. Trump's authenticity is 100, but to his own detriment often. Have you endorsed the former president?
Yep, with him. Okay. Yep. I think the biggest thing for him in Wisconsin, again, which may be certainly one of probably seven or less battleground states, it may end up being on the map, the tipping point one way or the other. It certainly was the last two cycles.
Yep.
He won 16. He won the country. He lost 20. He lost the country. And I think that's actually very instructive. So in 16, part of why he won in Wisconsin elsewhere was because he was perceived as being a fighter for the voters. Mm-hmm. So they were willing to overlook some of the things that personally they may not like, some of the statements and comments, because you felt like he was fighting for you. In 2020, particularly in the suburbs of Milwaukee, where there's historically not as strong as in reverse it is for Democrats in the big cities, but there's a traditionally a Republican advantage in the suburbs. That broke down. It didn't go away entirely, but it diminished in the 2020 election. And my theory was, as it is, I think, elsewhere in the country, was there were a lot of college-educated women and men. Mm-hmm. So not just people think it's just about female voters. No, it's women and men, college educated in the suburban communities, who didn't like his tone. And they thought he was fighting for the sake of fighting. His key in 24 is he's got to make the case. You're not going to change his being a fighter. I mean, no. People say, take his Twitter away. No, he is who he is. The key is he's got to be the guy who's fighting for you. Remember a year and a half ago when he showed up in East Palestine, Ohio, after mm-hmm. the train derailment? Biden was in Poland, Ukraine. Pete Buttigieg was nowhere to be found. Donald Trump shows up. He's got cleaning supplies. He's got water. He hands out hats. He takes all the first responders to lunch at McDonald's. I said to my wife, that's the guy who won in 16. Because mm-hmm. he kept saying, you're not forgotten. You're not forgotten. You're not forgotten. Because they felt forgotten. There's a lot of people in America who feel like all the politicians, including a lot of Republicans as well as Democrats, mm-hmm. Have forgotten them in mm-hmm. Washington. And if he makes the connection, I've not forgotten you, we're gonna do things that will help bring prices down. We're going to do things that make you feel secure and safe again in America. That's authentic. That's who he is. And that's to his benefit. But if he, you know, if he goes out and he takes pot shots, mm-hmm. I've argued both to him personally and to others, I don't care whether Kamala Harris is Indian or black. I don't care about her cackle. I don't care about anything else. I care that she and Joe Biden preside over this country where prices are up 20%, where housing is up in my state nearly 30%, where it cost me $1.25 more to fill up my gas tank than it did 4 years ago. And arguably under Harris walls, it will get worse. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be talking about anything. Not we, but those of us who support right. the president, that's what we should be talking about. Any day wasted not talking about those issues is the day more likely that we're going to have a president Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You said you've made some of that those points to mm-hmm. him personally. Was he receptive?
Yeah, I mean, in the challenge with him is he's a fighter. Somebody once pointed out to me in Manhattan real estate, you don't get anything done unless somebody punches you, you punch back mm-hmm. twice as hard. So I get that's ingrained in him. But, and it's not, again, I'm very cautious about this. Any of us in politics have big egos. You got to have something to counter all sure. the nonsense and crap you get. His is obviously supersized compared to the traditional politician. But that said, he gets it, but it's almost like a reflux. And yes. so, when he's right, when he says, well, I'm fighting because they're coming for you, well, keep that in the back of your mind. Mm-hmm. Keep talking that way and focus that way. I remember 8 years ago, I told him the day after the convention, he started talking about attacking Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz. And I called him up and said, they're gone. I said, the stuff you said last night about your father teaching you how to build things and your daughter mm-hmm. talking about how you talk to the workers in the site, not the bankers. Mm-hmm. I said, that's what America needs to hear. And I said, anytime you talk about something else, you give the media an excuse to talk about that crap instead of talking about what matters. Yeah. I thought, for example, last week, the National Association of Black Journalists, I thought he was great up until, right? I mean, I thought she was obnoxious. I thought 100%. It was out of control. It was way over the top. And he was just very calmly saying, why would you say that? And mm-hmm. and he had, he is right about historically black colleges and universities. He is right about the unemployment levels. He is right. So forget about her. Don't make a comment on questioning her. Doesn't matter. Voters really don't care. What she claims her ethnicity is, they care that her ideas are bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Democrats don't get a free pass on this. No. The whole, everybody's weird thing, and they're not focusing on anything either. No. But
they don't even let her talk. Anyway. I mean, that's why she wasn't
done any interviews.
She wasn't at that event. You'd think that would have been the friendliest audience she might ever mm-hmm. get. They don't want her anywhere. I loved it how yesterday in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, J.D. Vance pulled up, same city, same time, on the tarmac, mm-hmm. walks over to the vice president's mm-hmm. plane, and says, she's not going to take any questions, but I'll be here to take them for you.
Yeah, yeah, she's gotten away with that, and the media's not demanding. I mean, there obviously is that bias, and I came from that atmosphere, and just so you know where I'm at with Trump, I had full-blown TDS for like 6 years. I mean, I was in mainstream news. I would say I had convinced myself I despised him, right? And then I kind of came around to it, and then just 2 weeks before the assassination attempt, I said, you know what, I'm going to vote for the guy for the first time ever, mm-hmm. and not thrilled about it, but like, I'm going to vote for him for sure. But I really feel like post assassination attempt, his campaign has sucked. Mm-hmm. I feel like it has been horrible. And is that just me? Is that a bubble I'm living in? But I feel like the momentum is gone.
Totally. And we see it. Just saw a poll this week in Wisconsin that shows Harris is up by a point amongst likely voters. He was last poll they took a while back, maybe a month ago, showed him up by 3 over Biden. Totally shifted. And it's one of those where my sense is, I was talking about this in Wisconsin yesterday, is there's a sense, not only amongst the campaign, but amongst many Republicans, many of whom I saw in Wisconsin a few weeks ago at the convention, who are taking it for granted. Mm-hmm. You go back not just to the assassination attempt, but you go back a few weeks before that to the debate. Mm. When the bottom fell out for Biden in that debate, when everybody, even CNN commentators, are talking about how bad it was. So many people had built up on the Republican side, accurately so, the argument that Joe Biden was out of it, was disconnected. Mm-hmm. The problem is now he's gone. You know, so you have the debate, you have a really good convention. I think probably a bit of a missed opportunity that Thursday night, both with the president's speech and even things like the UFC head, Dana White, who I actually like, but I'm like, those people are already with you.
Yeah,
I would have rather seen the president's granddaughter, who spoke mm-hmm. the night before, introduce him that night, because yeah. you've got all of America watching. I said on the floor to somebody else, your audience is not here. Your audience mm-hmm. is at home. It's the people who are curious and want to hear a little bit more. And that night, I thought they did appreciate hearing what went through his head when the bullet came up and on the ground and why he did that.
It's a little long.
But it was too long, right? It's got, and so I don't think it's irreversible, but it is clear that there's people living, you know, living off of the last, the prior couple weeks, and don't see the momentum shift, particularly because there was such intensity about his state of mind. This is something I haven't heard anybody else talk about, but the problem is, if you're logical, you know that Harris's policies are Biden's policies, but I think the average voter has said, oh, all those concerns are gone because he was incompetent. That's why things are a problem, because he had maybe onset dementia, other issues. Now she's here. She's vibrant. She's exciting. She's giving these great rallies. You're right. That's all changed. It's changed the tenor of the campaign. Mm-hmm. But substantively, if you were upset before the debate that your prices are sky high, that, you know, you can fill up one cart for what got you three carts just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. If you're upset about all these other issues of the economy, with border security, with public safety, those things haven't changed. And arguably with Tim Walz, they get worse.
Yeah.
But nobody's really kind of woke up to that reality. Like, calling her names is not going
to
do it.
It's shocking to me that that's not, that people don't, that whoever is advising both of them don't see that and are like, just,
it's the problem living too much in a world of social media.
Yes.
And in a bubble of people, instead of really talking to everyday citizens who are willing to give him a shot. Mm-hmm. Like I said, and 4 years ago, they may not have liked his tone, but I've said repeatedly, they'll give up some political stability in return for some economic stability and recovery.
That is former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker on Undivided. We chatted with him this morning. We're going to have another clip from him. He's also the president of Young America's Foundation, YAF, which you might have heard of. So coming up on Sundays with Subscribers this week, we're going to talk about the youth of America, what YAF is doing to try to take what is, I think, an increasingly independent-minded generation of young people and expose them to conservative ideas, the free market. And so we're going to have that conversation on Sundays with Subscribers. If you're wondering why he's in town, he's actually going to be speaking tonight at a Project 42 event. Future 42 is part of Project 42. And so I'll be at that event as well. And it was just really nice. Nicole and I said, I'm like, what a nice man. We just want him to be president. He was just such a smart guy. I think another interesting thing about him, we also spoke about this, is, you know, nobody thought he could win his race as governor of Wisconsin. And he held it for two terms, the governor's office. And he made a lot of really important changes, you know, budgetary changes, for instance, changes to public education. And I think what he did in Wisconsin is a really good blueprint for what we can do in 2024 in Washington State. And he wrote an article recently, an op-ed recently, about actually our initiative process here and how you might be fed up, but just don't give up. And big things can happen, like what happened for him when he won the governor's mansion in Wisconsin. So really interesting guy. We appreciated him making time for us while he's on a short trip to Washington State.
All right. I think we went through all the local races we wanted to catch folks up on, although they're going to change throughout the day. And so we'll continue to have important updates that are pushed out as well. Coming up next, we're going to talk about chaos in Seattle City Council. Oh, my God. How many days have there been chaos at Seattle City Council meetings where they're forced to stop the meeting? That happened again. The reason is ridiculous, per the usual. First, if you're in the market to sell your home, especially at some point in 2024, and you're thinking, let me wait a little bit longer, see what rates do. Well, the thing is that right now, supply is low. So listing your home right now, it might be one of the only homes in the area. And so that's when you get into those bidding wars. Here's Wes Jones.
King County, median $1 million. Homes are still selling very, very quickly. If you want to do something this year, give me a call. I'd love to start the process now. I think that things will be moving very swiftly through probably October. And then as the election starts to come up, you know, get closer, people always pump the brakes. But for all of you who are out there that are thinking like, I can't sell my home because I need X amount, you're probably at the peak right now. You know, it's probably worth more than it's ever been than previous times. So what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for? So reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Check out a few real estate agents, you know, and find out how they differ, because I think you'll be really happy with what Wes Jones and his team have to offer. They have a lot of experience, a brilliant marketing strategy to get the most possible eyeballs on your listing. So sellwithwes.com, start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, moving to the Seattle City Council meeting that just happened. So there is, I think, a desire by a majority of the Seattle City Council to do things a little bit differently than their predecessors when it comes to addressing the city's very clear and present crime crisis. A crime crisis where the bulk of it is the result of people who are high out of their mind on drugs. I mean, that is just that. You solve the drug issue. I mean, then you solve the homeless issue. You solve some of the mental health issues, frankly, that are caused by years of substance abuse. And you solve, I would guess, 80% of crime, especially in the downtown core. Things like theft and vandalism and assaults that are driven and fueled by the drug crisis. So anyway, they want to take a harder line approach to drugs, and they want, if they arrest a repeat offender, for instance, who's violating the city ordinance and smoking or shooting up drugs out in the public, they want to be able to book him in jail. And if they can't book him in jail, they're sort of like, well, what's the point? What are we really doing? And so I absolutely agree with the Seattle City Council on that. They had a critical meeting yesterday to talk about what jail they're going to be able to book criminals in. Let's listen to this very important clip from that very important meeting. Oh, that's right. The meeting had to be stopped again because people who are little children who don't want criminals to be treated like criminals, who think that if they don't get their way, then they have to throw a fit and threaten people and harass the council members and shut it down for everyone else because they've been trained to believe over the last 10, 15 years that they can do that and it's just fine. So here's a little clip of what happened prior to them leaving the council chambers and putting on the elevator music.
We are moving on. We had an hour and 20 minutes of public comment. We, and our council rules require 20 minutes.
You know, DPD, the Department of Public Defense, may have left, but SEIU 925 is still participating in the stakeholding.
Okay, pause, Councilmember Kettle. All right. Unfortunately, this is not working repeatedly. We have now taken two recesses and multiple individuals are engaging in behavior that is out of order and this meeting cannot proceed. You can continue the meeting in Sam Smith and we will continue the meeting remotely from our computers. I am now asking security to please clear chambers.
Order. I don't understand what the motion on the table is.
I'm sorry. Councilmember Strauss, the motion is we have to vote on the relocation of the meeting to remote.
Why can't we just meet here if they're leaving?
Clearing the room. Why not just stay here and do it?
Point of information, Council President. I need more information before I vote on this order.
Okay. We will wait until we can see if we can clear the room. I see no objections to continuing the meeting in remote location. We will now proceed with the meeting in a remote location that I described, and we will continue the meeting at 4:30.
Good grief. Not only the people screaming, Councilman Dan Strauss, he's like, I don't understand. Why are we leaving? Why are we going to do the meeting remotely? It's like, do you not see why? And he's like, I want more information. Then they try for like several more minutes to get people out of the room. It's not working. So then he's like, oh, okay, I guess we can leave. Just, it's all a joke. It's ridiculous. And, you know, the reason that they're in there shouting, and they do this all the time, right? Whenever something isn't going their way, you have this small group of activists that comes in and disrupts, chanting, shut it down. And then, oh, we've got to shut it down. I'll talk about how we should deal with people like that in a moment. But this was all over a debate around just booking some people into jail. Just booking some people into jail who are specifically repeat offenders. So those people were that upset over the concept of finding a jail that will accept the Seattle Police Department's booking specifically for repeat criminal offenders. That just shows you there's a chunk of the activist class in Seattle who doesn't want anyone going to jail. Like, they just don't want. They want lawlessness. They hate the police, all of these things. And so they threw a temper tantrum. So the city of Seattle did announce that it's going to be able to, and it's because it's trying to reach agreements, right? Because remember the beef they're having with the King County Jail, where the King County Jail is understaffed. And they said, well, we can't give you all the beds that we contract with you for. So they're just shopping around trying to find jail that will be able to take them. So this from the Seattle City Council blog. Seattle City Council passes legislation diversifying jail options to better address crime. A new pilot program negotiated by Mayor Bruce Harrell's team authorizes Seattle to house 20 additional misdemeanor detainees at SCORE. That's in addition to the detainees held at the King County Jail under Seattle's contract with King County. The legislation is in response to a dramatic reduction in jail spots available to the city through the King County Jail. So they're like, okay, we're just going to put at least 20 people, be able to book them in the SCORE jail, a different jail, because the downtown Seattle jail simply will not take them. So that's what all those people were so freaking upset about. And here's the thing, it's like, okay, if they hadn't allowed this behavior for the last 15 years, I don't think it would have gotten so bad where they're routinely having to shut down council meetings. But every single one of those people should be trespassed. Every single one of those people should get a lawful trespass order. They were asked to leave. They wouldn't leave. And then the second, you know, and those usually last like 6 months, I think you can get a judge to extend them out. But the second they step foot in City Hall, they're committing a crime. And I get it, that City Hall is the people's building, whatever, but that's not how you behave. And you're shutting down everyone else's voices when you do that. And you're disrupting and it's threatening. I mean, the last time they did this, they were banging on the glass. And you know, Sarah Nelson and one of the other new council members said, no, I want the police here. Like, I want those people arrested. And there were arrests made. But for this incident, every single one of those people who refused to leave and were causing a commotion and stopping the city council meeting from moving forward, every single one of those people should be trespassed from Seattle City Hall for at least 6 months. Their pictures should be given to all the guards at City Hall so that they know if this person comes, they have to immediately be arrested. And slowly over time, you do that to enough of them, and then just the same people are going to be at Seattle City Council meetings. And if these people can't behave and can't voice their frustrations, which they have every right to do, they can show up. There's public testimony. That's what that was. And they can share the reasons they oppose booking repeat criminals into jail without throwing a temper tantrum. And unless they can do that, they shouldn't be allowed in Seattle City Hall. I don't see why that's controversial. It's just ridiculous. Like, the absolute soft on crime, soft on rioters, soft on freaking everybody approach. So yeah, so Seattle is going to have to bring some of its arrestees down to the SCORE jail in Des Moines. Because they have no other choice. So I'm sure that Seattle police officers love that they can't just book them into the downtown King County jail. Now they got to drive them all the way to Des Moines because our city and our county are absolutely ridiculous. And again, we're talking about repeat offenders. Like, this isn't somebody who's arrested for the first time on a shoplifting charge. Just stupid. Unbelievable, really. Can you hit the unbelievable? Do you have unbelievable for me?
Sure. I can do that.
Because it should have been unbelievable today. Stupid. Ridiculous. Embarrassing. Ridiculous. All right, we will have our actual unbelievable segment coming up next, but, you know, if the shoe fits. All right, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, and that's because you can save money on your insurance needs. If you're shopping for your insurance by yourself, and I've been there, it's really hard. It's hard to know, do I have the coverage I need, and is it at a good price? And if you're wasting time shopping around all these carriers, why not have someone do it for you, who's an expert, for free? First Mark Insurance. They're a longtime real estate. They're a longtime insurance broker in our area, second to none customer service, and you never pay First Mark anything for their services. So schedule the First Mark Challenge. It just entails you talking to them over the phone for a little while about your current insurance, your insurance needs. They go out, they shop the market with their carriers, and they try to figure out whether they can save you money for the insurance that you need. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't, and they'll let you know otherwise. But Ben and his wife, Leslie, undivided viewers, they saved $1,500 a year after the First Mark Challenge. Like, think about that, $1,500 a year. Those are like two round-trip tickets to somewhere nice, to paradise. And then Casey Covington says they saved him 37% off his auto quote. So it's really a no-brainer. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you. All right. Now let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Boop, boop. Okay. So speaking of ridiculous policies around crime, about a year ago, around a year and a half ago, we were like knee deep in coverage on the issue of sexually violent predators. So that's an actual designation in the state of Washington. They're called SVPs, and we put them on an island. It's like one of the rare things our state does right with horrible criminals is like we take the worst of the worst sex offenders and we put them on an island. Now, there are a lot of Democrats and progressives who would like to stop doing that, who think that that's somehow cruel and unusual to put violent, repeat, sometimes sex offenders who prey on children on an island. Like, if you want to die on that hill, Democrats, be my guest. I would love to see you die on that hill of getting the sex offenders off the island. But anyway, you know, it's and you know, I value constitutional rights, and so you can't constitutionally just keep someone on an island indefinitely. The way that this works is, so they serve their, like, let's say that they're convicted of a sex offense, right? And they serve their prison sentence. Then there's a process to determine whether they have been rehabilitated. And if it's deemed that they're at a high likelihood to reoffend, even after their sentence that was handed down is done, then they can be civilly committed to McNeil Island. So that's a civil commitment. Under state law, though, they can petition to have that commitment vacated and returned to normal society with some conditions of release. And that happens occasionally, right? And again, I'm for that in the sense that there's a process in place, right? A judicial process. Otherwise, you are absolutely stripping an American of their constitutional rights and throwing them on an island for the rest of their life. And I get it that some of them have committed grotesque crimes, but we can't allow the government that kind of power to make those sorts of decisions. There has to be a judicial process to go about deciding whether that person stays committed on the island or gets off the island. But one of the issues is I think that the state has gotten pretty lax at allowing people who shouldn't be getting off that island, not only to get off the island, but to be placed in communities without any care or concern for what that community thinks. The community of Tenino dealt with this, where they find out, nobody consulted them, nobody warned them, nobody talked to them, that there was going to be sexually violent predators housed at just a house that was going to be converted into sort of a state-funded facility. I use that phrase very loosely. And then there was another instance, I think it was it Enumclaw? Enumclaw? Yeah. Where they were going to put one of these sexually violent predators back into the community, like right by a school bus stop. Somebody who'd preyed on children. And the community's like, what the hell? So, you know, it's this whole, I get it that it's complex. I truly understand. But one of the key issues we talked about and one of the big things we harped on that should get bipartisan support is we have to dramatically improve community notification and community input. When we raised Holy Hell along with State Representative Travis Couture, Representative Dan Griffey, and others two legislative sessions ago about this, there was some progress in that regard. But much, much more needs to be done. And now we're hearing about a case, our friend Ori Hoffman with KVI broke this story, that illustrates perfectly why we were so freaking concerned about this and why parents and community members in Enumclaw and Tenino were so pissed off about this because of the potential that something like this could happen. Again, this from Ari Hoffman, former McNeil Island inmate indicted for receipt and possession of child sexual abuse images after seeking teen boys and trading sexually explicit photos. He was released in 2017 as a registered sex offender level 3, the level with the highest risk of reoffending. Ari goes on to say, this is who Governor Inslee, Bob Ferguson, and Washington Democrats have been releasing onto unsuspecting communities. And I mean, the details of this are absolutely horrific. According to a news release from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Washington, Alan Lewis Merhofer, the man in this case, was arrested on July 17th. He lives east of Hamilton. So he gets off McNeil Island. He gets put into a community east of Hamilton. He was allegedly befriending boys by inviting them into his home, where he provided them with food, clothing, alcohol, cash, and marijuana. According to Skagit County Superior Court records, when one of the boys that he was inviting into his home borrowed his phone, this was in February 2021, the boy was 15, he borrowed the guy's phone, he saw images of child sex abuse and photos of the boys who come to the house with Merhofer that had been sent to others. So this is someone who we knew he was a bad dude. That's why he was on the island. And then he gets released onto an unsuspecting community. And not only does he continue to engage in preying on young people and you know, child explicit images, but he's preying on young boys in the community. Due to prior convictions, Merhofer faces increased penalties if convicted. In 1988, he was convicted of burglary, kidnapping, and rape. In 1990, he was convicted of burglary in the first degree while armed with a deadly weapon and assault in the second degree. He was civilly committed to the Sexually Violent Predator Civil Commitment Center on McNeil Island. He was released in 2017 as a registered sex offender level 3 with the highest risk of reoffending. Why is that someone who's getting off McNeil Island? That doesn't make sense to me, because the civil commitment is only supposed to end when it's deemed that someone is not a danger to reoffend and a danger to the community if they're released from McNeil Island. How can you release someone who you are saying is a registered sex offender level 3 with the highest risk of reoffending? That makes absolutely no sense. This is exactly why we were fighting against this issue a year and a half ago. I'm not saying no one should ever, ever get off McNeil Island, because the island would be freaking full and we'd have no more room because we have so many weird pervs in the state, apparently. I'm not saying that they should never get off. There has to be a process where they can prove through an evaluation process that they're no longer a threat to reoffend. But this guy, and I guarantee I know why they let him off. I guarantee. He is 71 years old. He's 71 years old. So I bet they had a look at him and said, he's too old to reoffend. He committed his crimes. It was back in the 80s. He was much younger. And now he's pushing 70. He's too old. I guarantee you that is the argument that was made. To let that pervert off an island, violent, dangerous sex offender, to then go prey on kids in Skagit County. It's insane to me. Absolutely unbelievable. So thank you, Ari Hoffman, for finding that out and sharing it. And I think Ari was communicating with him last night, and he had the full documents on this case. And I do want to know what the argument was for allowing him off the island as a level 3 sex offender. Truly ridiculous. All right, let's get to a little bit of national news, just briefly, because we talked to Scott Walker earlier about national politics. So I saw this. It seems innocuous, but Tim Walz, the Minnesota governor, is picked as Kamala Harris's running mate. And I think he's relatable and kind of folksy or whatever. And they keep trotting out these pictures of him like in camo with guns and like, see, he's not that far left. He loves to hunt. Whatever. And so they put on the Harris Walz website a camo hat that says Harris Walz on it for sale for $40. That's a lot. That's a lot.
We should have charged more.
We should charge more for our hats. And I, at the time where they posted this, I had tweeted out a picture of it, and I'm from Minnesota and I grew up around hunting. It's like, they're literally trying to, this is like the party that wants to take your guns and they're trying to co-opt camo when it's convenient for them and act like they love hunters and love hunting. And it just is so transparent. But what's even worse, frankly, because like I don't put it past political campaigns to do something like that. But what's even worse is the way the media is just like, oh, isn't that awesome? Isn't that awesome? I want to read two stories for you. And you tell me if there would ever be a story like this about a Republican candidate. Like, think of the stories you've seen about J.D. Vance. They're digging up friends from his past who are no longer friends with them and putting them in prime time on network news and, you know, spreading made up stories about him having sex with a couch that was like totally from a bot account, just wild stuff. But if you're Tim Walz, Kamala Harris's running mate, they're going to talk about your fashion, about your camo hat. How cool is that? This from the Washington Post. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz posted a photo of himself wearing the just released Harris Walz camo hat. The sold out back-ordered campaign merch is a send-up of the Minnesota governor's trademark Midwestern dad fashion, giving MAGA a run for its money. That's literally from the Washington Post. Isn't there saying democracy dies in darkness? Holy smokes, can you imagine anything even close to that being written about a Republican? And it shouldn't be, by the way. Something like that shouldn't be written about a Republican or a Democrat. I mean, the media is epically failing at its job. And then this from CNN, they have a picture of him in his hat smiling. It says, what do sport hunters and fans of breakout queer pop star Chappelle Roan have in common? Well, not much, perhaps, but now you can add at least one item to that list, Kamala Harris's and Tim Walz's new campaign cap. What is happening here? Please, even Democrats, you have to see how ridiculous that is. That's propaganda. That is propaganda. And that's one of the reasons I think Kamala Harris seems to have so much momentum is the media is like inflating their intrigue, their interests, like their coolness, their ideas and everything. I mean, the media is fawning over them. They're covering them like they'd cover Taylor Swift. And Republicans don't get an ounce of that. Again, nor should they. We don't need media that fawns over politicians and treats them like celebrities. It is super, not only is it strange, it's dangerous for our country. You know, think about everything happening, two global conflicts, the border crisis, public safety issues, middle-class Americans struggling, and we've got the damn Washington Post talking about Tim Walz's trademark Midwestern dad fashion. If that's not a reason to cancel your subscription to the Post, I simply don't know what is. Nicole?
I was just going to say, yesterday I was listening to the news and I heard a CBS report on different campaign things, right? So they started with Vance and said, oh, Kamala, it was this quote from him, says Kamala would just be an extension of Biden. They've done nothing for you, blah, blah, yeah. blah. So it's that's a reasonable statement to play on the news. And then they went to Kamala and she said how terrible Vance was and whatever. And then they went to Biden and they said, I don't even know if Trump will go along with the transfer of power because, you know, I mean, of his comments on the bloodbath, there'll be a bloodbath. So they played that as if that is how Trump stated it. So that's Biden saying that Trump said there was going to be a bloodbath and there wouldn't be a peaceful transfer of power.
Which is not, of course, what
that's insane. Said. Yeah. So you just went opinion, like settled, then it ramped up a little bit with Kamala, and then here's Biden with the lie.
And then they don't challenge it, right? And so that's just as bad.
Give you the information. They present it like it's news.
Right. And so then for Americans who don't know any better, they're like, oh my God, he said there'd be a bloodbath. Yeah. I can't vote for him. That's crazy.
That was regarding the automobile industry. If they went to Mexico, right. It didn't have anything to do with the transfer of power.
Disproven over and over and over again that he was suggesting there'd be a bloodbath in America.
But it's just the way that they're covering it is just so dishonest, and it is blatant.
It's horrifying.
Actually, know what they're doing.
And I wouldn't mind. Like, look, if they want to be that hard and dishonest about Biden too, fine. Like, at least be equal about it. I would like you to be hard on both the candidates in an honest way and be factual. Obviously, that's what we would hope of the media. But it's not even up for debate anymore. I mean, you just look at that coverage from CNN and the Washington Post of a camo hat. And they know the appeal of it, right? They know that this camel hat is being used to appeal to a certain base of voters. Yet, and knowing that, they're like, let's do all these stories about how he's cool and he's got this Midwestern dad fashion. So it's beyond bias. Everybody knows it. I don't understand why they can get away with it. And I'm not saying that, you know, right-leaning media like Fox News doesn't do the exact same thing on the opposite, but I'm not talking about the Fox Newses and the MSNBCs. This is the Washington Post and CNN. These are supposed to be more neutral news agencies. Because, yeah, whenever I bring up media bias, people are like, well, what about Fox News? I'm not talking about Fox News. It's the other reason I don't talk about the bias of MSNBC, because they are intentionally designed to be a biased news network for progressives and Democrats. Same with Fox on the other side. But the Washington Post certainly doesn't call itself that. This stuff is wild. I just don't know how the media survives. I don't understand. It's hard for me to put myself in the mindset of someone who reads that and is like, yeah, look at that cool hat. Like, yeah, I love this story.
I want to see the hunter who wears that hat.
Oh my God. There's no hunter buying that hat. I just know, should I buy one for my husband?
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
Yeah. Happy anniversary.
Yeah, have fun on your hunting trip. I packed you a little gift. Like, open it up when you get there.
I just hate giving them money.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't want to give them money. All right. We're going to get to our daily subscriber. Why can't I talk today? Our daily subscriber show poll coming up next, as well as your questions and comments. First, if you have an RV, listen up, folks. We want to be your friends first, but also we want you to buy a lot at Natchez RV Resort. And then, because we've already become friends, you'll invite us to Natchez RV Resort to hang out, go swimming in the pool, hang out in the clubhouse, all of those things. So Natchez RV Resort, one of our newest sponsors, they are now opening their phase two grand opening. They're gonna have their grand opening pricing starting August 24th and 25th. They've got 18 extra large RV lots starting at just $79,900. They have first class amenities. They just built a huge 4,300 square foot luxury clubhouse, complete with a great room, indoor outdoor fireplace. It's an entertainer's dream. Gourmet kitchen, gym, fitness center, showers, laundry, all sorts of stuff. You can also enjoy their pickleball courts, playground, dog park, miles of recreational trails, and the beautiful saltwater swimming pool and spa are going in as we speak. In fact, I think they're just on the end of getting done with it. So Natchez RV Resort, Natchez RV Resort. Don't miss out on phase two grand opening pricing, August 24th and 25th. 18 extra large yachts. You can find out more at NatchezRVResort.com. All right, I lied to you. Before we get to your questions and your comments and the Daily Show poll, it is Thursday. We cannot abandon my sister, who's all the way in Florida enjoying sanity. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, how is Florida today?
Well, South Florida is not so bad, but North Florida is reeling a little bit from the hurricane that hit this past couple days. So,
yeah. Is it more common for hurricanes to hit North Florida or South Florida?
I mean, when I first moved here, they were always hitting South Florida, but now they always kind of skip over Miami and go north. They usually hit like inside the Panhandle or almost to the Carolinas, and we just get like a little bit of rain. So, yeah. I mean, knock on wood, so.
I mean, I don't know if I'd take hurricanes over wildfires or which one I'd rather take. At least hurricanes are like there and then they're mostly done, but they can be just so destructive. But wildfires can burn for weeks. And so it's like, anyway, you know, Pick your state, pick your natural disaster. All right. So Ron DeSantis, despite, you know, his beef with Donald Trump when they were running, he's being a good, diligent soldier in helping Donald Trump's campaign and in speaking out against Kamala Harris and her new running mate, Tim Walz. Our home state of Minnesota governor. I wonder what mom thinks of that, by the way.
I'm sure mom loves it. I haven't talked to her. I'll have to call her to get a little political convo going.
I'm sure she loves him. Yep.
Enjoy that. But yeah, so it's probably to no surprise that DeSantis isn't a huge fan of this ticket. He says it's probably the most left-wing ticket we've ever had in the history of America. I know that he had a lot to say about how Walz handled a lot of the Black Lives Matter protests and everything that happened to Minneapolis during that. He had a pretty much a zero tolerance policy for that kind of rioting here in Florida. So, but he did actually, to be, it's kind of the way politics go, he did actually kind of blame Trump for the lack of response in Minneapolis as well. So, you know, I mean, I think he, obviously, like you said, he's being a diligent soldier for Trump. So he's going to speak out pretty heavily against this new little ticket that's that they have going on.
Yeah, well, and he's not wrong. I mean, I think it is demonstrably the most furthest left ticket. And that's one of the things that surprised me about Tim Walz is he is really, I mean, he's touted socialism, and that was just a few weeks ago. He's very, very progressive. But Kamala Harris is too, so I thought he'd find a more moderate to sort of balance her out a little bit. But they're like, nah, we're just going to go full on left wing and hope that works out for us. So yes. I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting, though, that Minnesota's in the spotlight. And it's just, it seems like a different state, certainly, than when we grew up there. I don't remember it. And I don't think it really was as liberal as it is today.
No, and I also think that we still grew up in that time where, like, really talking about politics so openly was a little bit taboo, you know, like, it's like, don't talk religion, don't talk politics, which I don't think is healthy either. But, you know, I don't remember it being so liberal either when we were growing up. So
yeah, I suppose that's the case for Washington State too. I think if I had been growing up here, I'd also be surprised by the state of things. Yeah. All right, I had to ask you about this because it was all over social media. Cocaine bundles washed up on a beach. Thankfully, they washed up in front of a Good Samaritan.
Yes, and this is actually something that Hurricane Debbie churned up with her when she was making her way towards Florida. So this is also a hurricane-related story. But again, yes, 70 pounds of cocaine washed up shore on a beach down in the Keys again. And the Good Samaritan, as they normally, I suppose if it found its way to a bad Samaritan, it wouldn't make the news. So I guess that's why we always hear about it being a Good Samaritan.
Very true.
Yeah, they turned it into the police officers. And again, it's just like millions of dollars worth of cocaine that washed up on the shores. And it's just kind of shocking, but also not shocking at all how often this happens.
I guess I always just wonder, like, what, you know, because was it like a plane drop that went wrong and they couldn't locate it? Was it a boat that capsized? I'm like, how did that much coke all bundled up get in the water? And somebody's had to have gotten in trouble with the drug lords for that one.
Yeah, I can't imagine the repercussions of losing that much cocaine, but I don't know. It happens all the time. Usually it's just one or two little kilos that float up, but this was quite a bit all strapped together. The hurricanes always wash up some interesting stuff. So I'm not super surprised cocaine was part of this wash up.
Well, I mean, if that had washed ashore in the wrong part of Miami Beach, it'd be a party on Miami Beach. Like, there are areas where absolutely they would have busted into that cocaine. So, all right, which, don't do drugs, kids, and certainly don't do drugs that you find on a beach. All right, Miranda, I'm just full of good advice. Thank you so much.
Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Don't do beach drugs. Don't do any drugs, okay? Definitely not beach drugs. All right, in our daily subscriber show poll, I asked you about something I was discussing with former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker earlier about the momentum shift in the presidential race. I think it's pretty clear, right? Like, man, I was on this show after the assassination attempt, and I was like, I will crawl over broken glass to vote for Donald Trump, and I was so psyched. Now I'm like, wow, he's really running a crappy campaign. And it's hard to know how much of that is, like, artificial, how much of that is just, like, temporary excitement around Kamala Harris. So I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X what you most attribute the momentum shift to. Is it to excitement around Kamala Harris? Like, people are just genuinely jazzed? Is it just the simple exit of Joe Biden? So the fact he's not in the race is helpful because he was so old. Is it that Trump isn't running a good campaign? Is it lack of excitement about J.D. Vance? Or is the media artificially elevating Harris? Right now, 76% of you are saying the media is artificially elevating Harris. 11% Trump isn't running a good campaign. 8% the exit of Joe Biden. And 5% the excitement around Harris. A few comments Greg P. says Trump needs to focus on issues, resolutions, pulling the country together, and quit calling people names and bad-mouthing and stop lying. Yeah, all those things would be good. It's hard, I get it, because, like, Democrats bad-mouth and call names and lie, and the media just goes along with it. But when Trump does it, he just has to understand that he gets different treatment from the media. And that's what they're going to focus on instead of ideas. So you're almost giving them ammunition against you. You can hope and pray and wish the media does better, but I don't think it's going to. So he needs to play the hand he's dealt, and that is a very biased media. Theodore Cartwright, once Kamala is forced to answer questions off script or in a debate, she'll start tanking just like last time. Yeah, I mean, she does better in debates, but I mean, we've seen her out there talking about issues from electric school buses to the border to foreign affairs, and it's embarrassing stuff. Let me see here. Rainy Dog, the mainstream media certainly play a significant role in portraying Kamala Harris as a great candidate, but I follow a number of people on social media who will vote for anything or anyone with a D after their name, regardless of the candidate's viewpoints or policies. Sadly, there's no reasoning with people like that. And that's not who Trump's going to appeal to anyway. We're talking about the middle. We're talking about swing voters, about independents, and who they're willing to vote for and how much does their vote really shift in just a few months period of time. All right. Megan says, I tell myself the honeymoon period will end as well. Yeah, I think with Kamala Harris, it will, but it's a short, I mean, she just got in the race. And so when you're a candidate a year and a half, you know, prior, then there's a lot of time for the honeymoon phase to wind down. With this, well, I don't know. Maybe she takes the honeymoon phase all the way through to November. Heidi says, still cannot believe a person was elected by a party and not the people. One more, Will Culbertson, cracks are already showing. The media is starting to talk about how Harris is avoiding them. This isn't 2020 and the basement isn't going to work this time. Yeah, because it's not the pandemic. They could say Joe's in the basement because, you know, the pandemic. But right now, I mean, Kamala Harris has not done a formal sit down interview with anyone in the media or sat to answer questions from the media in a gaggle since she became the party's nominee. It's been like, what, 15 days or something like that since she was the presumptive nominee, maybe even more than that. So she can only go so long. And there's a reason that she won't answer questions. It's because she's not confident and her campaign's not confident in her ability to answer those questions. And that is very, very scary. All right. We will get to questions and comments now or next. Let's just do it now. Fine. Let me see here. Noir Viator. Northwest Aviator? Is that maybe it? Okay. Maybe. $4.99 Super Chat. Thanks for all you do. I sent a DM on Patreon if you get a chance. Yeah, I try to read Patreon DMs every Sunday, so I'll get to it on Sunday. But if it's urgent, let me know. And I can go through them at some point this evening. Stephen Heindel says, the upset group should be called the Angry Birds. Yeah, I think that's what Ari Hoffman calls them, Angry Birds. I have not done that. I have not name-called semi-bird supporters. Somebody said I called them bird brains. I've never called them bird brains. That's just a lie. Did you call them bird brains?
I did not.
We did not. So,
I mean, there's lots of creative names.
Yeah. Although I will admit I got something wrong yesterday, not on the show, but on social media. I was defending Dave Reichert saying he didn't, maybe I did say it on the show, he didn't engage in any of the semi-bird attacks. And then somebody said, yeah, he did, and sent me an article from after the convention where he called him a snake oil salesman. So I was like, oh, he did call him a snake oil salesman. Okay, well, I was wrong. See, you just admit when you were wrong. And I did not see that particular quote, which I don't think is very helpful. But Chris Hall, Reichert needs to do more than just focus on the lies Ferguson is telling. He needs to focus on his positions. I think he has been focusing on his positions, but he needs to get those pitches on his positions down to a bite size. I'm not saying you don't put like concrete steps in policy platforms on your website, but I think you need to have some key points that you can quickly make, drive home at every event you're at. I'm going to do this, 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 this. And you can talk a little bit about how, but I think the key is making people understand the very high level things that you will do, that you stand for, and then you need to have the how on your website at least, or be able to answer questions, obviously, on the how. Let me see. Cascades writes, Reichert should address the sportsmen and women and tell us he would do what he would do with the game commission. Yeah, I know there's we've had interviews on the show about frustrations for sportsmen and women. Sasha Windfeather, love the name. Don't you love that we only had 25% voter turnout when the ballots are mailed to your house?
I know you mentioned this. It makes you know, you like it because it's convenient and makes it easier for people to vote. But it seems like people aren't really into snail mail these days. And every time I talk to somebody, they're like, oh, yeah, I think I got that. Or, oh, I haven't seen it, or whatever it is. And so every excuse in the book, there'll always be an excuse. But again, I like the idea of having a national holiday, having voting day off, and you go to the polls. And if you treat it as a vacation day, that's on you. And you can just not vote because that's
I think there's arguments to be made for both of them. I think if you really make it a special thing for Americans to do, then just like 4th of July, maybe they'd participate and have group things and go together. So I don't think
countries do it.
We're never going to see that back in Washington state, at least not in our lifetimes. I really don't believe so.
But people need to be more engaged. I think everybody's checked out because politics has become so annoying. And, you know, the bickering and stuff. Yeah. And so I think people have checked out and people need to be more engaged. And I do think, you know, August kind of that date kind of comes and goes. But people do think November, think election. And so I hope
it's the summer
that like turnout is better in November.
Summer distracted, all these things. Greg Anderson, I think we should have a law where running for another or higher office, candidates must resign the office they have at the time. Yeah, I'm kind of both ways about that. I think it just depends. Like, if can you continue to do both jobs? Like, for instance, and you're probably talking about Monica Dingram. The legislature is a 3-month job. And so I don't think that because you have a 3-month job, you can't focus on running a campaign. Now, we do have an aspect of our law that deals with conflicts of interest in that you can't, there's a fundraising blackout period. So Monica Dingra wasn't able to raise funds for her, like actively be out there campaigning to raise funds during the legislative session. And so that's, you know, a conflict of issue, you know, so somebody's like, hey, give me money for my campaign and there's this law in front of me and I'll do something with it. So it helps to prevent against that. But also I think it keeps them more focused. Like if you can't be out there actively campaigning and asking for money, then you're focused on your job as a legislator. So I don't have an issue with that. As much as I don't like Monica Dingra's politics, I don't have an issue with that. Now, when Governor Inslee ran for president, I feel very differently about that because he was gone all the time. I was at Fox 13 at the time. We requested his public calendar. And we did an actual like day by day, was he in Washington or not? And like half the time he wasn't even in the state. And so that when you clearly can't fulfill your obligations in your current position, I do think that you have to resign. Anyway. Nadine Montreal said when most offenders reach elderly age, they become more expensive due to health issues. So maybe that was the issue with McNeil Island where like he couldn't.
Like they're like, oh, becoming expensive. So they send him home.
Can't care for him here or something.
He's high maintenance. We'll just let him go. And then.
Yeah. Oh, I see what Greg was commenting on. I was really confused about this. Greg McNeely, Walls slipped in Minnesota human rights protections against discrimination against McNeil Island type residents in his state. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what our discrimination laws are here for former felons or what. Well, you're always a felon. Once a felon, always a felon. But, you know, certainly registering as a sex offender definitely sets you back a little bit. It's going to be hard to get some certain kind of jobs, and there's no way around that. But yeah, it's just an insane situation that we continue to let these guys off. Also, Sir Hopsalot, Aberdeen MAGA councilman raped a child. Why don't you mention that? We did mention on the show yesterday. Riley Carter resigned Friday, August 2nd, just a few days after his arrest. This is a King 5 story. After being charged with rape, Aberdeen city council member resigns. And he was accused of, like, molesting repeatedly a child. We talked about that on the show yesterday because we were discussing the ferry captain standing up for his son that like allegedly was distributing child pornography. There's a picture of this guy though. I think it's legit. That's not it.
I think they blurred out the, I don't know. It was a red hat though.
So well, he's got a red hat on, but I don't know if they blurred out what the red hat said in this particular picture. His hat said, make pedophiles
scared again.
Mm-hmm. And turns out he is
one of those.
So that's doth protest too much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's disgusting. So yeah, we did talk about on the show yesterday, Sir Hopsalot. I don't care if you're a MAGA or what you are. If you're a pedophile, then you think I'm going to give you special treatment. That's just strange. That's just not the case. All right, really quickly, the week started off rough. I mean, not just for us in the studio in the election week, but on the stock market. There were all these people, oh my gosh, we're going to recession. The stock market just crashed, et cetera, et cetera. And I said on Monday in our weekly segment with Zach Abraham on Bulwark Capital, I wanted him to kind of explain what's going on. And so he joins us to do just that. We were going to throw you on the air on Monday. Understandably, you were a very busy man on Monday. So what the hell happened at the start of the week?
Oh man, it's such a Such a big question. There's there's a lot of different things into it. So we've been talking about this on our show for quite a, for probably about the last month. This is the least fundamentally driven market that anybody has ever seen. Meaning, I just did an interview with a PhD economist from Harvard who worked at the Treasury and now works at a hedge fund. And he and I were talking about how what were previously seen as emergency measures from governments, from the Federal Reserve, from the Treasury, that those emergency measures that you would typically take to avert a recession, or to soften the blow of a recession, that a lot of those things have become permanent fixtures of this market. We want what we want with zero consequences. And this market has become a mirror to that, and it's become a reflection of that. So if things are so good to drive these tech companies to points where they realize the ridiculous valuations that these things are, the vast majority. I mean, you've got the NASDAQ index as a whole trading at like 10 times revenue. Okay, if you go back to the 99 tech bubble collapsing, 10 times revenue was seen as like the most absurd peak of peaks. This is an average now across the index, right? So what we were saying was, any divergence like that you see, by definition, it is a temporary thing. Because if what is going on in the economy is so beneficial for this group of stocks, it can't be bad for all the other ones, right? So it just doesn't work that way. And a really good way to illustrate this is, if AI is going to be as powerful and profitable as AI stocks are reflecting, then what that inherently means is that so many other companies that use their products need to be economically benefiting from that as well, right? Like, for instance, AI needs to get us to a place where we can have autonomous factories with no humans working in them, therefore saving companies a bunch of money on labor costs, therefore boosting their profit margins, right? So you can't have one and not the other. So our argument was, look, this divergence between these indexes can't last. And the crazier it gets, the closer you know you are to the end of it. Well, that divergence started unwinding about 2 weeks ago, and it crescendoed early this week, late last week. And there's a lot of talk that it was, oh, here comes the recession. What we saw over that period of time, some not good economic data played a role, but I would say it was probably 3 to 5% of it. A lot of this was just natural market gyrations. But I do think the important thing to take away from this is not that there is impending doom, not that the world's about ready to end, but what it's showing you is that these constant interventions that are happening via the Fed and the Treasury and everything like that, they're making markets increasingly more unstable.
Natural market gyrations? That's a new one. Whenever I think of gyrations, isn't that a dirty word, or is that just me? Isn't that only a sexual word, or no?
It's definitely been made by.
Gyrations.
Oh my gosh.
You're an act or instance of gyrating. Anyway. Oh, that's our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital. Bulwark Capital specializes in risk management. You only get one retirement. You don't want to put it in unnecessary risk. Of course, there's always risk involved, but they specialize in looking at, you know, the full picture, not just the markets and the stocks, but looking at what's happening nationally, what's happening internationally, when there's global unrest, when there's a contentious presidential election, and all these other factors. They're considering that when they decide and determine how to manage your retirement portfolio. So especially if you're getting close to retirement with all the insanity going on right now and the markets the way they are, it's really good to make sure you have someone managing your money who is looking at the risk factor. So you can learn about Bulwark Capital's strategies to manage risk with their free common sense investing guide. Get yours by calling 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. All right, in our closing sanity check, I swear our friend Jonathan Cho is going to get killed at some point covering the homeless crisis. Let's get to it. So we've been talking about this Burien homeless encampment drama. So the city of Burien doesn't want the freaking tents there anymore. But the problem is the city of Burien relies on the King County Sheriff's Office, and the King County Sheriff is a politician, is a political appointee under Dow Constantine, who I honestly think this is a vendetta. The mayor of Burien has spoken out against King County, so they're like, screw you, we're not going to enforce your homeless camp ban. But the issue is that it's putting people at risk. I mean, first of all, the people living in the encampments are at risk. We've said that all along. The most dangerous place to be is in an encampment, in a tent, where you're more likely to be the victim of a crime, more likely to overdose and die from drugs, and no one finds you. It's just not humane at all. But encampments have issues around them. Encampments bring a certain level of criminal activity. I mean, a lot of people in those tents are using drugs. What do you have to do to use drugs? Well, you've got to fund your drug habit somehow. You might be stealing from businesses or whatever it is. And then in Burien, now there's this additional level of security risk because now there are kind of activists and protester types who are monitoring these encampments because they don't want them to be swept. Well, our friend Jonathan Cho went down, was trying to report on a Burien encampment. He ends up getting chased by some guy and pepper sprayed, and of course, he was filming. Remember fighting to go.
Last name is Choe, and I was in there documenting what was happening just about 30 minutes ago. One masked man, black male, came out and started chasing me down. And he came and swung at me and made contact with my shoulder. Luckily, I got out of there and ran across the street. Okay. Then I turned around and I came here to file a police report. Then a man in a teal shirt, I got him on camera, as I was waiting for the door to be opened, pepper sprayed me.
Yeah, look, I know Jonathan Cho puts himself in some very precarious situations, but the truth is that it's precarious for anybody who is around one of those homeless encampments, and that is precisely the reason why the city of Burien wants to be able to sweep them. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A few reminders for you. Next weekend is Freedom Fest, Summer Freedom Fest 2024, the second annual Freedom Fest. It's happening in Redmond at Brian Haywood of Let's Go Washington's personal property, and it is going to be a banger. There's going to be live music, food trucks, vendors. Nicole and I are going to be there. You're going to hear from political candidates. We're going to get all hyped up about the initiatives. So next Saturday, August 17th, I cannot believe it's going to be the 17th already. Next Saturday, that is absolutely insane. But come, bring your lawn chairs, sit, listen to music, have a good time, get jazzed about November. Join hundreds of your fellow Washingtonians in caring about saving this state we love. All right, that was really the only housekeeping, except to say that we've got a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up on Sunday. We're going to talk about an effort to recruit more judicial candidates. Remember, you guys are always complaining that the judicial races, people run unopposed. Well, there is a group trying to change that. They're going to join us. We're also going to hear more from Scott Walker on his work with Young America's Foundation. We're going to talk about the youth of this country and maybe how we can save them and save our country in the process. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here for this election week. Primary election week. Man, time's flying by. Before we know it, we'll be here for November and the election. We'll all be celebrating and having a good time because the results are going to be fantastic, right? All right. If you haven't supported the show already, you can do that by signing up at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. It's just $5 a month, and it helps us continue to do this show full time and reach more Washingtonians, which is the goal. And if you don't live in Washington, you are more than welcome to join us too. All right, we'll see subscribers on Sunday. We will see the rest of you on the live show Monday at noon. Have a fantastic weekend. You too, Nicole.
You too, Brandy.
Thank you. That's so nice. Yeah. Boop.